Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, April 3rd, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway World's Matt Tamanini. Isn't this April Fool's Day?
No, we don't know. Please, God, don't know.
All right.
I said it on Twitter. Like, maybe I just have no sense of humor or have no soul, but I don't like the Fool's part of April 1st. It's old.
Yeah.
Or I'm old.
Sorry. I am Broadway stars James Marino. I agree with you. I'm so over the whole April Fool's thing. I've actually never really been into it, so I don't know if it's an age thing.
Yeah, maybe not. Oh, well, either way, over the weekend, April Fool's or not, although considering that what was supposed to be a monthly podcast is now, we're referring to it as the biannual, literally, Patty Murin the podcast, we did release a new episode on April 1st, in which Patty talked with our good friend Robbie Rizel. It is all kinds of bonkers. Those two together, it was really, really difficult for me to edit it because they just go on so many different tangents. I didn't know what to keep and what not, but it's really, really funny. Those two are great together. And I think after we stopped recording, you can go back in our Twitter histories. I think I convinced Patty to let Robbie direct her next cabaret performance. So be on the lookout for that. But James, in addition to that, that's in everybody's Broadway Radio podcast feeds. But then yesterday, you had a really cool episode of This Week on Broadway where it was just really you and Jenna Tessa Fox. You had that remote session with Peter Felicia that we talked about last week. And you and Jenna talked about a bunch of shows as well as interviewed A Bronx Tale's Bobby Conte Thornton.
Yeah, Bobby Conte Thornton was a lot of fun. We talked about A Bronx Tale, and Matt, I know that he came from that school up north, University of Michigan.
Everybody does.
And we talked a lot about the program at Michigan and the Michigan Mafia here on Broadway and things like that. It's a lot of fun. Plus, we played a handful of clips from the new original Broadway cast recording of A Bronx Tale. So check it out. And insofar as Patty and Robbie, I did see the whole thing about Robbie directing Patty's next show. But I want to see when Patty directs Robbie's next show. That's what I really
want. Oh, that's a good idea. I think between you and me, I'm a huge Patty fan, but I think she would be a great cabaret writer and director. I think that's a good idea. We'll put a bug in her ear.
All right. So first up, critics review the play that goes wrong on Broadway.
Yeah, the Olivier-winning British import, The Play That Goes Wrong, opened last night at the Lyceum Theater, co-written by Mischief Theater Company members Henry Lewis, Jonathan Sayer, and Henry Shields. The Play That Goes Wrong is an absurd comedy about the theater, often drawing comparisons as an even more lowbrow Noises Off, if you can believe that. The Play That Goes Wrong on Broadway features its entire original West End cast, and James, well, I don't think this show is going to be etched on the Mount Rushmore of all-time great plays. It seems like, for the most part, as long as you aren't completely, you know, adverse to this type of comedy, you're going to like it, and it seems like it's pretty successful at being incredibly silly and stupid. Broadway radio friend Matt Wendman wrote about the show on AM New York, quote, "The Play That Goes Wrong is a nonstop, intensifying rush in which the murder mystery is performed from beginning to end. The eight performers have individual personalities but come together to form a tight ensemble, well-disciplined in the art of being hilariously bad." Frank Scheck of The Hollywood Reporter wrote, quote, "The production certainly fulfills its modest creative aspirations. The actors are very good at being bad and are so daring with the outrageous physical comedy that we often fear for their safety. There's no paucity of wit to the proceedings, and director Mark Bell stages the action with clockwork precision. Nigel Hooks's purposefully cheesy set design," I don't know that a set designer has ever gotten praise for a cheesy set, but "the purposely cheesy set design deserves special commendation, rivaling Disney's Haunted Mansion with the ingenuity of its surprises. But for all the strenuous effort involved, the repetitive show evaporates in your mind the moment it concludes." So a little caveat there from Frank Scheck. The other Frank that reviews shows, this one Rizzo for Variety, write, wrote, quote, "Wrong isn't interested in the relationship between its characters and the ones they portray in the play within a play. It's more lowbrow, interested in the gag and shameless in how it gets it. Sometimes incredibly inventively, but sometimes going for the low-hanging fruit." He does give a special nod to the sound designer Andrew Johnson, who created, quote, "the various bonks, splats, and crashes." "It's clear from the beginning," Rizzo writes, "even before the beginning with its pre-show shtick, that wrong will be just right. But," he does say, "it takes a while before the laughs come at full speed." Now, often the wet blanket in Broadway reviews, Jeremy Gerard from Deadline wrote, quote, "An overabundance of nonsensical sight gags, slow burns, pratfalls, missed cues, wink winks, and the like dull the viewer's senses and drag out a sophomoric sketch that would be sharper and funnier at an intermissionless 80 minutes." I've mentioned this a couple times so far about Jeremy's reviews. He's often the odd man out, especially this year, which is kind of interesting. But for the most part, James, I feel like this is kind of similar to what you said about Miss Saigon. If you said if you liked Miss Saigon the first time, you're probably going to like this revival. I think with The Play That Goes Wrong, if you like silly, goofy, low-level comedies, you'll probably like this one because it seems like it's done pretty well.
So a few friends of mine who are not people that typically go to Broadway very often, once a year, twice a year type of people, got some TKTS tickets for The Play That Goes Wrong, and they had a great time.
Yeah.
And they raved to me about it, and they loved it. And I'm looking at the list of what's on Broadway right now on what's playing on Broadway.com, and I think that this is...
Nice what? Plug.
Thank you.
Nice plug.
Excellent. And I think that this is the only, you know, flat-out comedy of its type to be playing right now. I don't
maybe
see
present it. Maybe Present Laughter would fall into that category. I mean, it's not the same type of comedy, but it's definitely a straight-up comedy.
Is Present Laughter playing yet?
Yeah, we're going to talk about it here in a little bit. It officially opens this coming week.
I see. Okay, next up, the Park Avenue Armory gets great reviews for The Hairy Ape.
Yeah, James, this is a production that's getting a ton of publicity right now, and it's a revival of Eugene O'Neill's expressionist drama, The Hairy Ape, that's playing at the Park Avenue Armory, and it stars one of my favorite actors, Bobby Cannavale, and it's directed by Richard Jones. The show is scheduled to run through April 2nd, with tickets starting at $30. It officially opened last week, but we didn't get to any reviews just because it's been crazy the last few weeks, so we had a little extra time, so I wanted to slip some of them in, especially because I'm seeing just so much great word of mouth about it on social media. Leading off, Mr. Ben Brantley of the New York Times wrote, quote, "Mr. Cannavale's emphatically flesh and blood presence makes him the perfect odd man out in a dehumanizing world of machines, literal and otherwise. While this production may work most effectively as a visual feast," in parentheses, he writes, "just wait until you see how the closed set opens to embrace the armory's walls. It also gives full due to the patterns of O'Neill's language in their resonant repeated words, including stinging variations on the notion of hell and the verb to belong." Peter Marks of the Washington Post continued, quote, "With an eye that reminds you more of a cinematographer than a theater director, Jones stages the eight scenes of O'Neill's 1922 play on a conveyor belt centered on a grand blank canvas, the cavernous confines of the Park Avenue Armory. It's such an epic vision of the piece, the role of the ape could have gone to King Kong. In this case, it actually went to someone who manages to seem almost as big, the ferocious Bobby Cannavale, who breathes fire into the drama's central heap of clay character." Finally, the last one we'll mention here is Frank Scheck, as we mentioned above, from The Hollywood Reporter. He wrote, quote, "Environmental theater doesn't come any more powerful than the staging of The Hairy Ape being performed at the Park Avenue Armory. Eugene O'Neill's 1922 expressionist drama is rarely seen these days, but director Richard Jones's production brings it to magnificent life with a visually stunning, stylized rendition that gains resonance from its overwhelming setting. You may have previously seen the play, but you've definitely never seen it like this." James, with a fairly limited run with a pretty big name star, I don't know how many tickets are available, but it is definitely one that if you can get tickets to, you definitely should. And James, I think a second ago I said it runs through the second, which is the day we're recording this. It's actually the 22nd, so I apologize if I misspoke.
Yeah, so the Park Avenue Armory is becoming a place that is being more and more sought out for these types of cutting-edge productions. Very exciting, and I'm not sure if they are self-producing or if it's a rental space or what's going on there, but really cool stuff happening there.
Yep.
All right, tell us what's happening in this week's theatrical schedule.
Oh, James, what isn't happening? We're going to stick mostly with Broadway, but there's going to be a few off-Broadway and West End stuff, and we're going to stick mostly with openings. However, as I'll say eventually, too, I will put links to all of the appropriate schedules and stuff in the show notes. And James, as always, if you want to chime in on one of these shows, just let me know. Starting today, Amelie, the musical, officially opens on Broadway at the Walter Kerr Theater following two California out-of-town tryouts. Starring Philippa Sue, Adam Chandler Barat, Tony Sheldon, and more, the musical is based on 2001's Academy Award-nominated French film starring Audrey Tautou. That seems, James, like this could be a little bumpy when we talk about reviews on tomorrow's episode. It's not getting super great word of mouth, so hopefully, the critics see something really good with it, because I love that film and I love the people in it. So fingers crossed about that one. Tomorrow, off-Broadway, The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, officially opens at the Lucille Lortel Theater, starring Chris McCarroll, George Salazar, and more. The musical is based on the beloved YA novels and films about demigod Percy Jackson, obviously. This show is scheduled to run through May 6th. Now, Wednesday, this is where it starts to get a little crazy. Back on Broadway, the Kevin Kline-led production of Noel Coward's Present Laughter officially opens, directed by Moritz von Stupenagel. The play co-stars Kate Burton, Christine Nielsen, Kobe Smulders, Reg Rogers, and others, and is scheduled to run at the St. James Theater through July 2nd. Also on Wednesday, a show that kind of seems to be flying below the radar, officially opens as the Public Theater's world premiere of Martin Sherman's new play Gently Down the Stream begins official performances. The show stars Harvey Fierstein, Gabrielle Ebert, and Christopher Sears, and is currently scheduled to run through April 23rd. Also on the 5th, the West End production of Edward Albee's The Goat or Who is Sylvia, starring Damian Lewis and Sophie Okonedo, officially begins at London's Theatre Royal Haymarket. And finally on Wednesday, 6 Degrees of Separation begins previews on Broadway with Allison Janney, John Benjamin Hickey, and Corey Hawkins at the Barrymore Theatre. We will talk more about that one as its opening approaches, but 6 Degrees of Separation is the final show of the 2017-2018 season to begin previews. Yay! Then the following night on Thursday, War Paint officially opens at the Nederlander Theater, written by Doug Wright, Scott Frankel, and Michael Corey. The musical is directed by Michael Greif and boasts one of the theater's most dynamic leading lady duos in recent memory, and Patti LuPone and Christine Ebersole as cosmetic rivals Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden. The show also features Douglas Sills and John Dossett. As I said before, James, there's a ton more going on off-Broadway and in London. It's a busy, busy week. So I will put the links in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com if you want to check out the extended calendars as well.
Okay. Yes, I'm exhausted just seeing this list. So what's coming up next in the show and casting news?
James, on Friday afternoon, the Bucks County Playhouse announced the cast for the upcoming premiere of Clue on Stage. We've been really excited about this one. The play, directed by Hunter Foster, is scheduled to run from May 2nd through May 20th out in Pennsylvania. And here's the cast, which has some names you might recognize. Sally Struthers will play Mrs. Peacock. Aaron Dilley will be Mrs. White. Kevin Carolyn will play Colonel Mustard. Brian J. Carter is Mr. Green. Clifton Duncan is Professor Plum. Lindsay Nicole Chambers is Miss Scarlet, Carson Elrod is Wadsworth, and Claire Simba is Yvette. Cassandra Dupler and William Yeomans will play multiple roles, and I'm very, very excited to see how this goes, because this is one of those shows, kind of like The Play That Goes Wrong, James, that really is different than what we've been getting on Broadway a lot. So if it does well out of town at Bucks County, you know, I think they want to do it at a couple other regional theaters, but I would not mind seeing something like this with a really cool, you know, niche pedigree, maybe taking a stab, you know, on Broadway.
Yeah. I mean, this, it sounds like it could be really good. So I'm interested to hear what people think about it and maybe even getting a chance to go see it.
Ooh.
All right. So what's up with La Lipa?
Well, also in regional theater news on Friday, the Bay Street Theater announced the full creative team and cast members of The Man in the Ceiling. The new musical features a book by Jules Pfeiffer and music and lyrics by our friend Andrew Lippa, and will be directed by Jeffrey Seller. Yes, the Jeffrey Seller who has produced every show you've loved on Broadway, from Rent to In the Heights, the title of show, to Hamilton. But that's not the only interesting bit of news about the show, as our friend Lippa will also be one of the show's stars, opposite John Brosco, Aaron Comer, and Danny Binstock. The Man in the Ceiling will run May 30th through June 25th in Sag Harbor. And I think the last time we had Andrew Lippa on this week on Broadway, he talked about this this show and that he was going to get a chance to do it. I don't think it had been announced where or when, but again, I think we're going to talk about Michigan. But he went to the University of Michigan as a performance major and then realized, hey, I'm like one of the most ridiculously talented musical theater writers in the world, so why don't I do that more often? But he said he's always, you know, wanted to perform as much as possible.
Well, we have to ring him up and see if we can get him on to talk about this, because I love this. I love that he's doing this. And Bay Street is a wonderful theater out east. When we were talking with Bobby Conti Thornton on This Week on Broadway, he just did My Fair Lady out in Bay Street last year, and we talked about that a little bit. So it's a great, great little regional theater. All right. Next up, Teresa Rabeck pens an essay on her experiences in Smash.
Yeah, James, have you read this Entertainment Weekly piece yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. What it is it's actually an excerpt from a book called Double Bind, Women on Ambition. It's a new anthology of essays that features prominent women, including Roxane Gay, Molly Ringwald, Francine Prose, and, as you mentioned, Teresa Rabeck. In the article, she talks about her experience creating Smash, working on Smash, getting fired from Smash, and all of, as she calls it, you know, rumors and innuendo about her personally that she does not seem to think are accurate. It's, you know, a lot of talking about misogyny and how, as a woman, she was kind of pushed out of the show that she created, and then realizing that she kind of was the force behind the show. Everybody else who had been involved kind of abandoned ship because they didn't want to try to take it on after she was gone. As somebody who kind of follows TV and stuff and has seen every episode of Smash, obviously, I don't know that I agree with everything in here, especially kind of the factoids about how well Smash was received initially. But for the most part, it's a really great read about what it is to be a powerful female creator in the entertainment industry, whether it's theater, TV, film, I'm sure music as well. Obviously, that doesn't really apply here. But she is somebody who has made an incredible career doing a ton of different things. And to see the uphill battle she has to do, continually pushing a boulder up the hill, it's really fascinating and insightful, and something that, James, you and I think we don't really have the ability to understand that because of the privileges that we have, but it really is a fascinating insight. And again, you know, she contends that Smash was this huge success during its first season. It was a modest success, but I don't know that that's necessarily the thing that's most important. But I have seen some people kind of pushing back on that on social media, saying that she's overblowing how well Smash was doing when she was running it. But I think if you can get past that, what else she says is probably more important to whether she conflates the success of Smash and the ratings or not.
Yeah, that's a shame that's a point that doesn't need to be brought into this argument here. I have to read this essay because I'm a big fan of hers, and she's got a very important voice, not just in the theater community, but globally. And so that's great, and I'm glad that you brought it to our attention. All right, why don't you get us out of here?
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Sound Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for starting your Monday off with us, and we'll be back and talk with you tomorrow.